This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Talk about oil prices as they continue to rise, and the Keystone oil pipeline going to be shut down again by President Biden. Also, Personal Finance Wednesday. Why you should consider freezing your credit. Shares of Netflix are soaring, up more than 15%. That's despite a disappointing earnings report. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, the change in administration in Washington fueling expectations for the economy. We're joined by Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Carl, one of the things that we expect is yet another round of stimulus as the president has unveiled a nearly $2 trillion package. Now, we don't know what it'll look like when it gets passed, but is this something that economists think is necessary given what's going on in the economy?
Thanks for having me back on Inauguration Day. It does look like more stimulus is going to be coming down the pike, but I think that the reality of very narrow Democratic majorities in both the House and Senate is going to mean that $1.9 trillion price tag will be whittled down when we actually get down to brass tacks. So I think we will see extension of unemployment insurance, stretching that out further in the year as the reality of the economy being locked down over a longer period of time is coming into view. It also seems to be relatively broad bipartisan support for sweetening those stimulus checks that were mailed out to households. So again, I don't think we get to $2 trillion, but we're going to cover the real core of what's hurting in the economy, which is state and local finances, rebate checks, and also unemployment insurance.
Now, as far as the checks go, one of the concerns was if you send out all this money, you might have inflation worries. It seems like at least thus far in this economy, that's been unfounded. Does that maybe make economists think that that might become more of a regular thing and not just pandemic stimulus, but regular checks?
I don't think it will become a regular thing. And I also think that the risk to inflation is fairly minimal. Inflation is what happens when we have sustained inflation. It requires the economy to be operating on all cylinders, whether we're looking at capital like factories and structures and equipment, or whether we're looking at the number of workers, labor force dynamics. And we are far from that level at the moment. Even though we saw a very impressive jobs recovery in the back half of last year, we are still 10 million jobs in the hole relative to where we were pre-pandemic. And that means there's a lot of slack out there. So rebate checks are helping to bridge the income divide until the economy's back in action, operating on all cylinders. But we're not there at the moment. And so I don't think we'll see much inflation. We'll see pockets here and there, but not a broad-based, sustained pickup in inflation.
Let's talk about what's going on with home building. You have some prices going up here for people building houses.
Yes, so we saw home builder sentiment this morning actually missing expectations, although when we look at housing data in the middle of winter, it's kind of an unusual dynamic where things can really be swung around by unusual factors. But as we look at the housing sector, we see very, very limited inventory. We see a lot of demand for housing and low interest rates helping level out that affordability equation. And so there's simply just not enough supply out there, which means we're seeing very dramatic price appreciation across the country for the housing sector. That should lead builders to eventually jump in, build more homes, and help to balance supply and demand. In the meantime, watch for those prices to continue moving up pretty aggressively, not unlike what we're seeing in the stock market as well.
Thanks so much, Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Just ahead, Netflix shares up a little more than 15% today. One stock really taking off, Netflix. It's up a little more than 15.5% today. What's going on? It had an earnings miss. Tom Lason is joining us, a media analyst based in Seattle. You can find him on Twitter, at Tom Lason. Tom, what's going on with Netflix, and why, despite the earnings miss, is the stock flying today?
Well, Cisco, they popped a big number, 200 million subscribers worldwide now, with 37 million added in 2020. You know, we talk about this in the markets all the time, you know, hitting those round numbers, do they really matter or are they more psychological? I guess that's a debate we can leave for others, but hitting that nice round number of 200 million and promising profitability, a reduction in debt, possibly a stock buyback, and there you have a recipe for success today.
And it sounds like, if I understand correctly, Netflix is no longer going to have to go out and raise money in order to make new movies and other shows that they want on the streaming channel. They're going to be able to do it on their own.
That's the thought, you know. And I will say, though, again, and you and I have had this discussion before, that is a goat. That content goat is never satiated, never full, always has to be fed. So, you know, there's a bear case for Netflix that talks about this investment continuing to have to be made, as there's this sort of death match, this sort of game of survivor between the streaming services. Research shows most Americans will only subscribe to three. There are going to be winners and losers. But for now, the conventional wisdom is, if you look at the stock price and look what's going on, is that Netflix is going to remain one of those winners.
Yeah, I wonder if Netflix remains kind of the base streaming package, where you just go, well, everyone has Netflix, and then you decide what you want of the other ones. You know, it's HBO, Disney, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think there's a case to be made that, because they were a first mover. You know, a lot of times the first movers get buried. Others come in and find a better way, a more efficient way to get it done. But Netflix has enjoyed that first mover advantage, and it looks like they're going to hang in there and do that. So I think you can make that case. Yes, Netflix is kind of your base case for streaming, and then others become add-ons. And I think the key to that, as we've said before, is going to be to continue to come out and to make the right investments. And let's face it, get a little lucky when it comes to hit shows. Right now, they've got Queen's Gambit and Cobra Kai and Bridgerton and The Crown doing well. But that quest for a hit show or a series of hit shows never ends. And that's how they'll be measured.
You mentioned the goat that just always has to be fed, that new programming, because once someone watches something, for the most part, they're done with it and they need more content. I'm just wondering if the fact that you have all these other streaming startups, if that makes it more difficult for Netflix, because the content isn't going to be out there to go out and rent to be able to put on their platform. They're always going to get to the point where, you know, pretty much everything's going to be Netflix exclusive.
Yeah, that's exactly the sort of rotation that's happened here. A lot of the other streaming services have called their content back for their libraries, you know, be it The Office or, you know, some of the discussions we've had in the past. Everybody now wants their library for their own streaming service. And some of these other competitors have robust historical libraries that they can draw from, like Disney. So it is going to be incumbent upon Netflix to continue to produce their own content. And I will tell you, I don't think it's so much the competition for content as much as it is for the competition for people. Boy, if you are a writer, producer, showrunner, you've got a couple of, not even hits, okay shows in your background right now. Man, I'm telling you, they are coming after you. You're getting emails, letters, and phone calls every day to produce. And that's where the premium really is on the talent that can create these programs.
I wonder if there's any talk at all about someone possibly taking over Netflix, because you figure that one of these outfits that's getting started, it just makes sense to go after, make a big buy, and get Netflix and just bring them into your house.
You know, I'm not aware of any of that, so I don't want to speak out of school here. But I will say, with the advent of SPACs and some of these other tools that we're seeing in the marketplace, there is going to be a consolidation. There is going to be merger mania at some point a few years from now. We'll be talking about streaming services coming together and this consolidation to bring libraries together and try to be one of the survivors. The business cycle doesn't change. Do the tools and the toys change? Yes, it does. Am I holding two remotes now or three remotes instead of one? Yes. But the basic cycle, the basic rise and fall of these isn't going to change.
Thanks so much, Tom Lason, media analyst based in Seattle. Up next, President Joe Biden revoking a key permit for the proposed Keystone XL pipeline. What may that do to oil prices?
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Oil now $53.50, one of the first acts of his administration. President Biden's going to be blocking the proposed Keystone XL pipeline, saying it doesn't serve the national interest. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Phil Flynn, senior analyst at the Price Group, also a Fox Business News contributor. Phil, help us to understand the impact of shutting down the Keystone XL pipeline.
Well, I think number one, we're seeing it in the markets today. We're seeing the price of oil go up. Make no mistake about it, the blocking of this pipeline is going to raise the price of oil. And it's not only his executive order on the pipeline that he's put in place today that's rising the price of oil, it's also his commitment to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord, which is going to reduce U.S. oil production, which is going to make prices go higher, and also putting a pause on any new leases in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. So those are three things, and that's one of the reasons why your gasoline prices have been going up since President Biden has been elected. In anticipation of this, the market's been running up because they know that under a Biden administration, we're going to have higher oil prices and higher gasoline prices, and it's being priced in today.
So that gasoline price, I mean, it's essentially it's going to the consumer, right? They're the ones feeling it.
It really is. I mean, you know, it's very nice to talk about, hey, you know, we're not going to get this dirty oil from Canada and we're all for climate change. And that's good, right? You know, but there's a cost to that. And that's a cost that the American consumers are going to pay. We're seeing it in higher prices. You know, a lot of people say the pipeline doesn't benefit Americans. Well, that's not really true. I mean, it creates 11,000 jobs in America, union jobs, high paying jobs. When we have the free flow of oil from Canada, we move oil in the most environmentally safe way. The other thing is that the more free flow you have of oil, the better for the global oil market, lower prices, and so it benefits our economy. But when you restrict oil, it's just like, you know, an accident on the expressway when you're going home. It's going to clog things up and create a mess, and I think we're starting to see that being priced into the market.
At least in the short term, is this at all good news for oil companies that have been dealing with those lower prices, and now, at least in the short term, they're getting some more money for their oil?
It would be, and I think for the short term, that's a good thing. But the if you talk to the average energy producer, especially the shale producers, they're not feeling very good about the Biden administration because they're worried about more regulations. They're worried about banks being stigmatized for lending money to fossil fuel projects. So they're going to have a much harder time, you know, raising capital to raise oil production. But I will tell you, somebody who is smiling today, OPEC, right? Because what's going to happen is that the production for oil is going to go up. The demand for oil is going to go up regardless of what we do. And the only difference is that OPEC will probably be the biggest beneficiary and U.S. producers are going to be secondary.
Thanks so much, Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Group. Just ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, turning your financial strategies and making changes because of what's going on in Washington.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Joe Biden has been sworn in as the 46th president of the United States. A special report from CBS News is next. It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Adjusting your strategies as a new administration takes over in Washington. A credit freeze is an effective tool to deter fraud. We'll look at if and when you should make a move. On the markets, the Dow up 259 points, NASDAQ is up 252, and the S&P is up 54 points. Oil is up 1% today. We have sunshine in Chicagoland. Right now it's 20 degrees with a wind chill that makes it feel like 8 degrees.
CBS News Special Report, a star-studded event at the U.S. Capitol. Lady Gaga singing the national anthem. Shortly thereafter, Joe Biden officially became the 46th president of the United States.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day. A day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve,
Mr. Biden addressed the nation minutes after Vice President Kamala Harris was first sworn in by Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
I, Kamala Davie Harris, do solemnly swear.
She is the first woman and person of color to become second in line to the presidency. Former President Trump, earlier in Washington.
I wish the new administration great luck and great success.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Matt Piper.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets doing really well today. The Dow up 259, NASDAQ up 255, and the S&P is up 54 points. Let's see what's going on. Vahan Janjigian is here, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management in Greenwich, Connecticut. Vahan, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Yeah, we have a very strong rally. I think it's simply some jubilation because of the inauguration. I don't think there's really any economic news to explain today's rally.
And is that, given everything that's gone over the last few weeks, the fact that today's gone well, really without a hitch, that's kind of calming Wall Street nerves?
Yeah, exactly. After the storming of the Capitol, I think a lot of people were very worried about Inauguration Day and that perhaps we would see more protests or demonstrations or even some violence. And you know, the fact that none of that has happened, I think, is giving investors some confidence, and they're celebrating by bidding up stock prices.
So going forward now, Joe Biden is president. There will be new economic policies, new things that he attempts to get through the Congress. What is Wall Street in general thinking about what they've heard so far?
Yeah, that's going to be the real test. You know, we're going to wait and see what some of these policies are. Of course, everybody knows that Biden has already said that he plans to increase taxes. Wall Street knows this. I think this is already baked into stock prices. As long as the tax increases are not too much and not any more than expected, then I think the market can handle that, and it wouldn't be such a bad thing. Of course, President Biden has also talked about energy companies and trying to phase out fossil fuels and wants to do it rather rapidly, yet energy stocks have been doing quite well ever since he got elected. So we'll wait and see what he brings us.
Yeah, earlier we talked with an oil analyst. One of the things that's interesting to me, at least in the short run, is for some of these oil companies that have been struggling with the low prices, they may not necessarily like less oil being used, but in the near term, they're making more money off the oil they're selling.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, if President Biden is successful in trying to wean America off of oil, and these oil companies are going to be drilling less, the fact of the matter is that we will continue to use oil for a lot of things, perhaps less for transportation, but we'll still be needing it for a lot of other things. That could cause oil prices to go higher if we're not drilling as much. We already know that OPEC, for example, led by Saudi Arabia, is planning to produce less. Russia, of course, is a big factor in the equation as well. But if the world is producing less oil, even if demand subsides a little bit, we will see higher prices, and that means higher profit margins for oil companies.
Morgan Stanley, yet another investment bank knocking it out of the park. What do you make of what's going on there?
Yeah, the banks have been doing very well. You know, the stock prices aren't reacting as you might expect to these earnings, possibly because we've already seen a bit of a run-up in bank prices recently. The numbers are coming in good. The yield curve seems to be steepening a little bit, and of course that's good news for banks. That means they can make higher profits. I actually think the banking sector or financial companies in general are a good place to be investing right now.
And that was actually going to be my follow-up. You think it's good even with these good numbers? People always wonder, okay, well, did I miss out? You know, do I need to wait for some sort of a pullback or something? When it comes to these banks, not necessarily waiting.
Well, you know, one of the things I've learned in my years of investing is that you can never pick the bottom or the top. The point is, it's probably not too late to get into these banking stocks. I think they still have a ways to run.
Let's talk about the travel sector. You have that still depressed because of the pandemic. You have cruise lines, hotels still really hurting. Airlines kind of rebounding a little bit with a few more passengers. Is that a sector that you're taking a look at, given the fact that when there's a rebound, it could be pretty significant on the stock?
Yeah, I haven't been investing in those sectors yet, but you're right. When the pandemic is over, when we see the peak of the pandemic, and we see the numbers, the daily case numbers plummeting strongly. They are coming down by the way. If you look at the seven-day average, they do seem to be declining now. If they start declining rapidly and these vaccines are rolled out more rapidly and it looks like this pandemic's going to be over, I think you will find that those sectors are good places to invest. I think people will start traveling again. However, I don't think we're going to go back to the pre-pandemic levels for several years. You know, one thing many people have learned is that they can get a lot of business done without actually having to travel anywhere.
Yeah, that business travel, I mean, it may never actually be what it was, given everything. They can handle it just on a video call.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I still think there's a lot to be said for face-to-face meetings, especially if you're in sales. But otherwise, I don't think it's really necessary for people to travel as much as they used to.
Thanks so much, Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management. Just ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, making sure your money strategy is in sync with the change in government.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're examining the impact of the change in federal government on financial strategy. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, one of the things that President Biden has already been calling for is more stimulus, specifically more checks going out to everyday Americans. What should people do if they're getting that check and they don't necessarily need it? You know, it's not like they need it for the rent or something.
Well, Cisco, you're exactly right. The $600 that's already been making its way into the bank accounts, according to the new president, is nothing more than a down payment. So get ready for more checks that are coming. And I advise everybody, if you are in a fortunate position that you don't need the money for the rent, you don't need it to put food on the table, now is a great time to start funding and securing your retirement. So make sure you're opening up and adopting a traditional IRA, or better yet, getting money into the tax-free safety zone of what we call the Roth IRA. That'd be a great spot for those stimulus checks.
Yeah, one of those things where you just plan on it ahead of time so that you don't get the money in your account and start spending it a little bit here, a little bit there. If you plan for whatever it is, the IRA or whatever you're going to do with it, just get it done right away.
Yes, if you go ahead and budget properly. Now, granted, Cisco, there's a lot of people that woke up in January of 2021 with what I call a financial hangover, because I know there was a lot of retail therapy happening in terms of retail consumer shopping at the end of the year. And I just want to interject, you know, if you do have credit card balances, if you have unsecured debt, look to get those paid down first before you fund that IRA, because you can't out-invest long-term double-digit APRs on high-octane credit cards.
Yeah, and I mean, moving forward, when it comes to rebalancing a portfolio in light of a new administration, changes going on just in the business landscape in general, is that a good thing to do right now, too?
Well, I think everybody should be taking a look at the rotation that's happening. A lot of people are calling it the Biden boost, because we've had a good run in the broad-based equity market since the election back in November. That being said, I think what's uniquely interesting is you're seeing some rebound now in financials, rebound in energy, rebound in all these forms of cyclical stocks. Or for a lot of 401k investors, it would be the value side, the value-based mutual funds. So I think now is a great time to take stock of your asset allocation, what's in growth, what's in value, and probably rebalance back to the middle to make sure that you can take advantage of the spending that's likely to come on infrastructure, the expansion in some areas of healthcare, and of course, pay attention. While we're not going to have an overarching Green New Deal, I think there is lots of opportunity in this public-private partnership arena of various forms of renewables. That's why people should be repositioning their portfolio.
Yeah, interesting that infrastructure is, well, something that President Trump talked about, and there was nothing passed on it. President Biden's talking about the same thing. Seems like there might be bipartisan support for actually moving on that. Is that something people should be thinking about?
You know, I do think that that is exactly it. You know, there's bipartisan support, and we have full control. While it's a slim majority, it is still a majority between the House,
the Senate and the Oval Office. So I think you are going to see these prognosticators, you know, really come and manifest some change. So I think making sure that you're investing in those areas of infrastructure that are likely to have this public-private partnership are going to make an awful lot of sense.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. Thank you so much, Craig Bolanos, founding partner, chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group, based in Inverness and Downers Grove.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A credit freeze is a strategy sometimes employed to protect against identity theft. Let's get the pluses and minuses from Matt Schultz, credit chief credit analyst at LendingTree. Matt, help us understand first off, what is a credit freeze?
Yeah, a credit freeze is basically the nuclear option when it comes to protecting your credit. What it does is it temporarily keeps anyone from accessing your credit report, including yourself. So that basically means that neither you nor an identity thief, for an example, can open a new line of credit in your name. So it's a pretty good move, especially if you're somebody who isn't planning to apply for credit anytime soon.
So what is it like if you put that in place? What is it like to get rid of that when you do decide you want to get a car or a credit card or whatever?
Yeah, it used to take a lot longer than it does, but generally speaking, you may need to provide a PIN if you want to unfreeze it. And generally speaking, like I said, it used to take a couple of days potentially to unfreeze that freeze, but now generally you're talking about hours.
And so for someone who does this and wants to do it, what do they do? You have more than one credit bureau, so what's it like to do this?
Yeah, generally all of the bureaus have an online process that walks you through how to set that up. And it's really just a matter of following that process and making sure that you have that you have any information that you might need to provide them in terms of your location and that sort of thing. It's a pretty quick process.
Seems like this could go a long way toward preventing identity theft, given the fact that, I can't imagine a lender that can't pull your credit is going to actually extend credit to somebody when they're trying to use your information.
Right. That's really what it's all about. It's important for people to understand that it doesn't keep somebody from doing something bad with an existing account. So you still need to keep an eye on those bank statements and credit card statements, but it does generally keep people from opening new accounts in your name, and that's a really significant thing.
And just as a reminder, you touched on this earlier, but some people might be afraid that it would hurt their credit score or that it might somehow be a mark on their credit report. Does any of that happen?
No, not at all. But it is just important to understand that if you are somebody who's going to be applying for credit sometime soon, that it isn't an instantaneous thing to remove it. And just build in a little bit of time before you apply for something if you have frozen credit.
Yeah, it really seems, almost like a no-brainer. If you're not going to be opening any sort of account soon, it almost seems like a no-brainer to protect yourself.
Yeah, it really does, and especially now that it is free, because a few years back you would often have to pay for this sort of thing, but now that it's free, if you're not planning to apply for credit, you're right, it really is a bit of a no-brainer.
Thanks so much, Matt Schultz. He is Chief Credit Analyst at LendingTree. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle. vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.